So good evening. So we are, hopefully tonight, we'll actually be able to finally finish Siman Reish Ayin Aleph. And actually, several things to discuss. One is the ink. B is the quill. C, there is an issue with writing with the right hand. Now, what does it mean to use the right hand? So we'll get to that, hopefully, a little bit later. So the Torah tells us, with regards to the ink, so if we look in the Torah here, so it says, V'ena nichteves, on the first page of the source sheet, I believe. I don't have a source sheet in front of me, but I believe that that should be the first.
Looks like
the Torah, right? So the Torah on top, vav, it says ve'ena nichteves ela b'dio, that you should only write with ink. Upeirish Rabbeinu Tam she'ein nikra dio ela she'osun osan mimine kotzim yiduim she'mevashel osan ve'osun osan mimei mehen aval lo osu she'osun me'afatzim me'afatzim. That you should make it from some type of kotzim, some type of thorns, that we know how to make, and we don't make it with gallnuts. Upasal the Sefer Torah, and that would pasal the Sefer Torah. Doni avia rush kasev shu kasher, that it would be kasher, kiven shu asoy im kamos, because you're using gum for it. Okay, so there seems to be a dispute between, at least at the Torah quotes, between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rush. Rabbeinu Tam seems to have very specific instructions as to what can and cannot be used for ink, and the Rush seems to argue on that. So now take a look in the Beis Yosef. Where is this coming from? So the Beis Yosef says, Brice of Perek HaBona, it's in Maseches Shabbos, Kasav Shelo B'Dio, Osha Kasav Es Haskaros B'Zahav, Harei Elu Yignazu, that those things that are not written with ink, or you wrote it with gold, that's going to have geniza. And the quotes from the Yerushalmi, that's the din of Allah Moshe Mi-Sinai. So what is that telling us in Maseches Shabbos? So he says, say two things. A, if it's not made of ink, it's a problem. And B, if it's made of gold, it is a problem. Right? So if I know that it has to be Dio, and Dio is not gold, so then why does it tell me that it can't be made of gold? Well, what's being added there? So perhaps it seems to indicate that Dio is perhaps not so exact. It just can't be of something else. So as we go down, we quotes from Rabbeinu Tam here. Rabbeinu Tam is quoting from several sources, which we saw already. Rabbeinu Tam seems to have very strict rules as to what it is. However, if you then go down to where the Rambam is. So the Rambam, let's see, there's a little star where it says, on the source sheet, only the ayin came out. It said ayin on the side. But there it is, about six lines before the bottom of the section, it quotes from the Rambam. It says, "Uperek Aleph mehilchos tefillin." Just keep in mind, in the Rambam, all hilchos tefillin, mezuzah, and sefer Torah are all put together. So why he calls it hilchos? It's called hilchos tefillin, mezuzah, and sefer Torah. And the first perek are things that are mostly covering all of them, meaning the quill and the ink and the parchment. All of that is in perek Aleph. So it's not necessarily hilchos tefillin, hilchos stam. Kasav writes there, Shadayoa Asui me ashan hashmanim meguval bisraf ha'ilan umaatvash visaroi bimeya fatsim vichyotsebo. Now what is that? That it's the, you would collect the, I'm looking, make sure I have the right words here, that they would make it from the ashan, the smoke of the shmanim, of the oil that they would burn, Meguval b'sraf ha'ilan, where they would include in it the sraf ha'ilan, pieces from the sap of the tree. I can't find it in the, I thought I had it in the Rambam here, okay. What else do I got here? B'sraf ha'ilan, uma'at vash, a little bit of honey, v'shor b'mei afatzim, and it's put in the liquid of the afatzim, of the gallnuts. V'chiyotzibon, things like that. She'im timchakenu, Yenimcha ku hadio, such that if it is erased, it will be erased. Meaning, it actually should be erased. Why? The Rambam continues, Shemitzvah min hamufchar, because the ideal is lichtov bo, to write svarim tefillin umezuzos, to write these things. V'im kasav shalashdan, Shemitzvah min hamufchar lichtov bo. Yeah, svarim tefillin umezuzos. Now, if you use the shalashton and the Kalkantum, which is what?
Shlashta just means the three.
The three, I'm sorry. If you write the three of them, b'mei aftza, in the gallnut juice, and the kalkantum, which is translated as vitriol, which is some kind of rusting of metal, shu omed ve'enu nimchak, which stands and never is erased, so that's still going to be kosher. Right? In kain, ma miyuta halacha, shenemer l'moshe misinai. So if so, so then what is the halacha Moshe misinai? Meaning the Yerushalmi said that it's halacha Moshe misinai. But here you're telling us it could be this, it could be that. He says halacha Moshe misinai simply is sheyu kosun b'diyo, that you have to write in ink, l'mayit shar minitzivonim, as opposed to other colors. Could go into Edom, like red, b'ha yarok, or green. V'chiyotzi behem, shim kasum afilu os achas, b'shar minitzivonim, o b'zahav, because if you write in any of those other colors, or if you write in gold, so then that's going to be puzzle. And adds the Beis Yosef, Yenagua Olam Kedivei Arambam V'Arash V'Chei Nirish Yudas Atosos V'Ravinu Simcha Shekasu Agos Maimini. And that the Olam is Noheg like the Rambam and the Rush. What does it mean to be Noheg? What does it mean that the custom is like the Rambam and the Rush? That we're not really, that the Halacha Moshe Misinai is not pertaining to a specific type of recipe, rather the halacha Moshe Misinai is that it needs to be black. And however you could figure it out that it's going to be 100% black, so then that's going to be kosher for ink. And the Beis Yosef says that's actually how we paskin. Now, we'll see, he actually leans a little bit back towards Rabbeinu Tam in the Shulchan Aruch itself, but we'll get to that shortly. Just want to, I think page number two, yes, page number two, I put on the Gemara from Maseches Sota. Now, you didn't quote anywhere here the Gemara Maseches Sota, but it does, but he said that it's l'chachila, shemitzvah min hamufchar, lichtovo, that the mitzvah min hamufchar is to write it in a way that it's going to be erased. Where did that, what does that mean, or it potentially could be erased? So where does that come from? So that's a Gemara Maseches Sota. So the Gemara, it's the first Gemara, right, there's a Mishnah there. Well, actually, yeah, there's a long Mishnah on the page. And then there's a Gemara, right? So the Gemara begins by saying as follows. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Meir. Kishayisi Lamad Eitzel Rabbi Akiva. I'm more quoting this Gemara because it has a very famous line in it. When I was learning by Rabbi Akiva, Hayisi Metil Kan Kantum Lato Chadiyo. I used to put the kankuntium into the ink that I was using for writing. Okay, below Amrli Davar, and he didn't say anything to me. Now, what's that kankuntium? So that was the word that the Rambam was using, that the Rambam quoted as the kalkanutus, or it's the same thing, some kind of vitriol, some type of thing that actually came from metal. Who's making the squeaking over there? So I used to use this stuff, and Rabbi Akiva didn't say anything to me. Kishabati, however, when I came to Rabbi Yishmael, when I came and learned by him, Amrli, he says to me, Bini ma malachtach, he says to me, what is your work? So Marti lo, I said to him, Lovlar ani, I am a lovlar, I'm a scribe. So Amar Ali, he says, B'ni havi zahir, he says, you have to be very careful, shemelachtacha melecha shemayim hi, because your work is the melecha shemayim. So this is a famous line, just because a lot of this idea of being a sofer is a melecha shemayim, the work of the heaven. In fact, the person who I learned a little bit of stam from Rabbi Elazar Adam, so he calls his institute, he teaches a lot of stuff online, so he calls his institute the Melecha Shamayim Institute, because that's it. So it comes from this Gemara. So Shema, why? So why is it such important work? Shema taxir os achas, so tatir os achas, because if you take away one letter, you add one letter, nimsis ata machriv es kol olam kulo. You end up destroying the entire world. So Amarti, because it could lead to mislead people, and people, you know, it could come with examples where one letter would change anything, everything. So Amarti lo, so I said to him, Rabbi Meir says, Davar echad yeshli shani mati l'to chadiyo. I have something that I put into the ink, vin kankantum shimo, and it's called this kankantum, this metallic thing. So Amar Li, he says to me, v'chimatilin kankantum l'to chadiyo, but are we allowed to put that in? So a Torah Amra Umacha, the Torah says you should go ahead and erase. Where does it say you should go ahead and erase? So that's in Hilchos Sota, right? The Megillah that one writes for Sota, you should write the Sofer and the Sota, and it should be erased. The Megillah and it should be erased. So it must be Kasav Sheyuchal Limchos, that writing that must be erased. So then there is a discussion about that, but that Gemara at least indicates that there's some kind of that. So that's the source for the Rambam saying that l'chadchila, the writing that you do should be something capable of being erased, and therefore putting in this metallic stuff, which is going to cause it to stay permanent, that actually is a chisaron, that actually is a problem within the ink. Nevertheless, it seems to me that most people use it, and we'll see the halacha that comes out of that a little bit later on. So let's take a look in the Shulchan Aruch itself. So in the I'm sorry, I forgot to turn the. You might have to turn your screen sideways. I forgot to rotate the pages there. So in Vav, in Reishai and Aleph Vav, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Sfal Sefer Torah Tzarech Shiichtevenu B'diyo." The Sefer Torah should be written with ink. Ha'asui mi'ashen hashmanim sharoi v'mei afatzim. That it's made from this smoke of the shmanim, of the oils, that is then mixed with the gallnut juice. Then he adds in l'chadchila tov lizaher shel lasos hadiyo ki im midabrim habayim min ha'etz. Midvarim habayim min ha'etz. So you should also be careful that the ink only be made from things that come from the tree. There are others in the, I noticed in the Sefer Piskei Tshuvos and Hilchos Tefillin. Remember the, these halachos, a lot of them are found in multiple places in Shulchan Aruch. This is Hilchos Sefer Torah, Hilchos Mezuzah, and Hilchos Tefillin. And Hilchos Tefillin is in a totally separate area, it is in Aruch Chaim, while Sefer Torah and Mezuzah are in Yerodeah. So over there in the Sefer Piskei Tshuvos, where it discusses, it has a pretty much says the same thing there about the ink used for tefillin. And Piskei Tshuvos quotes those who say that you should make sure that all of the stuff used for ink is also from kosher species, which is like a little odd. Why? What have we talked about here that could potentially not be kosher? The answer is no. There is, because the gallnuts. What are gallnuts? Apparently, are not like a type of nut that we're used to, right? Gallnuts, it's not like you have almonds, peanuts, pistachios, and gallnuts, right? Gallnuts is like my quick Wikipedia search is like the bugs use it as their protection within the trees, right? Is that, anybody want to confirm or deny that? It's a place that I think wasps or something go to grow, and then they dig their way out. And leave behind the casing that they leave behind are these gallnuts. So that's what's then used for the ink. So it becomes a pretty big imperative that it be you got to make sure the whatever bug is in there is out of there if you're going to make sure that only kosher products is used. So there is a story in Rabbi Riskin's memoirs. Stories for my grandchildren, I think is what it's called. I have it on the shelf over there. I just can't quite make it out. He writes, just full disclosure, is that he writes in the introduction that not everything I write in this book is absolutely true. I'm recording things the way I remember them. Okay? So he has a story there where he tells that he used to go and meet Rav Moshe Feinstein either every Friday he regularly went to when he was the rabbi of Lincoln Square Synagogue to go meet with Rav Moshe Feinstein and discuss the shilas that he was having. So one time he went down there and a friend of his who was a sofer got into the realm of sofers, told him that he discovered that the paint that is used for tefillin comes from a sap of the tree, and they discovered that there's really a lot of bugs in there, and it's actually you're using crushed bugs for the purpose of the paint on tefillin. So and that's what everybody's using for their tefillin. So Rabbi Riskin tells that he went to meet with Rav Moshe about it, and Rav Moshe I got to think about this. Sent him away. He came back a week later, and he knocked on the door. And when the Rebbetzin let him in, the Rebbetzin said, "I don't know what you asked my husband last week, but he's been pacing the walls, the floor back and forth the entire week, thinking about this." And the Riskin records that when I went to meet him, finally Rav Moshe said, "Listen, it can't be that it's a problem, because it can't be that we're going to now go ahead and passel all of the tefillin for everybody in the world." Which is an important mahalach. I mean, that's part of the mahalach that poskim have to have, is that you're not going to go ahead and passel everything that everybody uses. So I remember I shared this story with at first Seder. And I think Rabbi Gold was there, or Rabbi Gold was coming in or something. So I asked Rabbi Gold if he had ever, Rabbi Gold, who lives in town here, who probably some of your children were his Talmidim at some point in Torah Academy. So he was a Talmud of Rav Moshe. And I asked him if he ever heard of this or what he thinks about it. He says, there's no way it could possibly be true. Because there's no way that Rav Moshe would be bothered by this. It's, you know, he would have been able to answer the question in a few minutes. It wouldn't have taken him a week to come up with that answer. Beyond that, it's also questionable if the whole thing is even an issue to begin with, as we see here, that actually the idea that the ink and the paint, this was specifically an issue with the paint, not with the ink, but it's really the same halacha, the fact that they have to be from entirely kosher things seems to only be a chumrah, doesn't seem to be required mi'ikar adin. So the whole story has a bunch of questions, but the yesod of Rav Moshe saying that it can't be that everybody has been doing the wrong thing for all these years and we're not going to go ahead and passel everybody's tefillin in the world or everybody's mezuzah in the world, I think that yesod still holds, despite the fact that part of the details of that story may be somewhat questionable. But there is an idea based on the Zohar, the Lechatchila, you should not just everything should come from a tree, meaning you should specifically use agriculture for it, not anything that was an animal in any way. It's based on the Zohar, and this is actually an interesting, when does the Zohar get brought into the Shulchan Aruch, and when it doesn't is a shir that we've, I think, given before at another time. So anyways, the Shulchan Aruch continues, Yim Kasu, and if you write B'mei Aftza V'Kankanim, using the walnut juice and this vitriol, Kasher, it's still Kasher, Aval Lo B'Shar Mini Tzivon, but no other colors, K'gona Edom V'Hayerot V'Chiyot Behem, Shim Kasu Afilu Os Achas B'Shar Mini Tzivon, because if you write even one letter in another color, write O B'Zahav or in gold, it's going to be Puzzle. Essentially, they keep saying another color or gold, as if gold is not a different color. Okay. Anyways, then the Ramah just says v'chein asu lichtov shum shem mispar esrim va'arba svarim shelo b'dio, that it's prohibited to write even any of the things in any of the Megill of the Tanakh with anything but ink v'yishorim de lo b'inan dio rak b'sefer Torah. Some say that no, that's not necessary. You only need dio in the Sefer Torah itself. Okay. So So there's not much, the Shach does not talk about much here. There is an important Taz here, which we'll get to a little bit later, because it's not actually relevant to the issue at hand. But there is some action down below in the Piskei Tshuvos. So if you take a look at the Piskei Tshuva number... Tesvav, yeah. No, I'm sorry, not Tesvav. Yud Zayin. So first of all, things that come from the tree. So I am a mugging of Ram, Simon Lamed Beis, Sif Katan Beis. So this is, Piskei Tshuva Yud Zayin says, look at the mugging of Ram in Simon Lamed Beis. Now, it doesn't tell you that's Or Chaim, Simon Lamed Beis, because that's where the mugging of Ram appears. And Lamed Beis is where Hilchus Tfilin, the actual structure of Tfilin, is discussed. Vayim Sefer B'nei Yonah, Barichus, Midin Hadin, about this halacha. And then there's a bunch of things in parentheses. Skip over that. Actually, parentheses take you to the end. But about two-thirds of the way through, right, you see, he says, V'ruba de min karnin hu neged das Rambam. He suggests that many are against the sheet of the Rambam. V'rabinu simcha ha-machshir me'aftza v'kan kantim, that permit this. V'gam b'shal Torah hochem achar ha-machmir. And even in the Torah, we should be machmir. L'chein yesh l'hachmir l'daktek harbe v'lo yichtavu ha-sofrim v'me'aftza v'kan kantim, not to use the stuff l'chud, Rak im guma, unless you're using guma as well, uvlav hachi pasul min haTorah l'dasor v'poskun. If you don't do that, that would be pasul according to most of the Torah, according to most of the poskun. So even though the Rambam seems to say that even just using this walnut and vitriol, meaning the Rambam seems to say as long as it's black, it's fine. The Piskei Tshuva is, saying not everybody necessarily uses that Rambam, and he suggests that many are against it. So just yes, gum. Thank you. Right, that was it. That was the word. That was the word. Like for some type of thing, some type of gum that is added. Too much in the, like what?
Too much like English.
Yeah. So sometimes people ask, right? It seems like this should be the same halacha, not just for the ink, but also for the paint as well. I didn't find that connection yet. seems that they should be the same halacha. So some have asked, do you really need to get first? So what do you need when you get special sofer ink like I have here, or the paint which I have on my shelf over there, a bucket of it, right? So you're paying $60 for a paint for a bucket about this big when you can get a nice big paint a bucket of black ink at Lowe's for I don't know how much does a bucket of paint cost in Lowe's. I haven't bought one in a while. Less. Less than that, right? So could I just get plain back ink? So what are you getting for when you get the hashkacha here? So the first thing you're getting for, you're paying for, is to make sure that it's 100% black. Meaning you could say, well, instead of me painting my mitzvos with the expensive paint, I could just get a Bic marker and color it in. So a Bic marker is problematic because apparently Moshe Gans told me that if you look carefully at the Bic markers, they're actually dark purple, they're not black. And that is an issue. In fact, the Bi'ur Halacha, I meant to put this in the source sheet, but I didn't get to it. The Bi'ur Halacha in the Tefillin Sugya, in Simon Lamed Beis, when it discusses the fact that everything has to be black, the Bi'ur Halacha says, yes, and absolutely black. Don't give me this really, really dark blue business and say, oh, it really looks black from afar. It says, no. It has to be 100% black, meaning if that's what the Rambam is requiring, and that's the Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, and that's what the Rambam says needs to be, it needs to be. You can't play around with that. And so therefore, the hechsher is that that'd be made 100% black. And then the further thing that you're paying for then with the ink is that it have ingredients beyond just this concantum, right, that actually has natural ingredients that are mixed in. There are different, and that seems to be what is being required by the Piskei Tshuva and the Lechatchila, according to the Mechaber. So whatever the ingredients are, in fact, I found only really one significant website today that had a discussion about the making of halachic ink. I could post it. I think I still have it on my page here. There. Kosher ink. Scrolls for the number 4all.org. Okay, that's where I found he has a discussion about the different ingredients. He actually puts a recipe down for how to make appropriate ink. But that's also what you're paying for. They're not just be synthetic, but it actually have natural aspects in it as well. And that's required. Maybe the Rambam wouldn't require that, but the Piskei Tshuva does require it. Then there is, in Piskei Tshuva Yud Ches, is a pretty relevant sugya. It comes up pretty often once we get start using older Sifrei Torah. Because there, he says, Kasa B'Sefer, in Yud Ches, Kasa B'Sefer Chamudi Daniel, Im Nasa Hadiyo Edom Machmas Yushan Harbe. What about when the ink starts turning a little bit red because it's kind of old? Puzzle. It becomes puzzle. Adkan. That's what the Chamudi Daniel says. However, Ayin Mug, now this happens, right? If you look at the Sifrei Torah that we have in our shul, sometimes the ink begins to fade a little bit. And the first thing you see is that it starts turning a little bit red. Sheldon, are you nodding because you agree, or are you, you're taking my word for it?
I'm trying to think. I think it sort of looks maybe a little brownish, but yeah.
So it could start turning brown. It could. So the Ayin Mug in Avram Simulam Basif Katalam Tetz Ksaslo Mashmahachi, right? So the Mug in Avram is not so nervous about this. And this has been Shuvas Ksam Sofer Shinishal Inyan, because I was asked about this. Odu Sefer Torah Shinishtana Hadiyo La'achar Ha Ksiva. With regards to a Sefer Torah that the ink started to change after it was written. The Nepach La'adamdum Mikama Sevos I Kesheira Ha Sefer Torah. And it started turning a little bit red. Vahala de'im, and he came out, de'im hashinui lad momis hu machmas yushan, v'chedarku shel diyo harehu kasher. If it turned red simply because it's a little bit old, and that's what happens to old ink, he says it's kasher. Why? Because when you wrote it, it was written in black ink. And that's the halacha, right? Nichtov b'diyo, lahachi amra halacha, lichtov b'diyo, v'lo amra shetiyek ksuva shechora. It's not, the halacha is that it has to be written in black ink. Not that the writing always has to be black. It's pretty amazing that the Chassam Sofer would say something like that, I think. But that's what the Chassam Sofer suggests. That's quite a picture of you, Abraham, in the car. That's nice. But he says the halacha is that it needs to be written in black. But if it the natural change is that it turns red eventually, he says that would be okay. But as opposed to the Ritzuos on your tefillin, that must remain black. right? And Vahainu de'ilu nakid k'suva shechora, and after he goes on, and right? So he says the ritzuos, that has to remain black. Those ritzuos truces, they don't change colors. They just, the black starts, flaking off, in which case you have to fix it.
But you can repaint it, right?
Well, and then you can repaint it, correct, right? That needs to be... What?
Like, do you still get the same glossy finish?
Sometimes. Depends how good you are at it.
Okay. Well, I guess if you have black on black, it shouldn't be an issue.
No, the halach, with Ritzuos, the halach is that it needs to be black. In fact, somebody, I'm in the process right now of somebody has his tefillin out, he wants to change his Ritzuos, so he asked me to take a look at them. Do I need new Ritzuos? So he had painted, you could clearly see he had painted it in over time. There's all these patches of black. So I told him, halacha, it's fine, because the halacha is that needs to be black, but, you see all these splotches of black all over. So I could tell you, it might be nicer to have new Ritzuos at this point. So he said, yeah, change the Ritzuos already. Fine. So that's the halacha with regards to this. Now, skip a few lines in this Piskei Tshuva, because he quotes another thing that's very interesting. He says, right, he says, however, it's good to lahaviru bekulmus kedei lekaimo yamim rabin, that if you see it turning brown while the Sefer Torah is still kosher, you should cover it over with black ink. Right, you should cover it over again. Right, so that will be able to last a long time. The karav levadai afilu b'shemus hakadoshim mutter. It's even permissible to do that for Hashem's name. B'dio al gabi dio de inkan mechika, because that's not considered to be erasing. What's he talking about? Oh, because he continues. Right, because amlam im nishtana leodem mamish. But if it turns totally red. But if it turned red, meaning if it was red the whole time, it turned red very quickly. It wasn't just that it got old, but it was like black ink that was bad and turned red. That's a problem with the ink itself. Sefer Torah kazeh puzzle. That Sefer Torah is going to be puzzle. And in fact, you're not going to be able to fix it, because he continues on, it's a long discussion, I'll just explain it outside, because he says that, what are you going to do? If it turned red right away, that's not called black ink. So now you have the Shem Hashem written in red, right? So if it's a regular word, then you just cover it over in black, right? And now you have, and that's fine. But if it's the Shem Hashem, you're actually, in effect, overriding, you're erasing the red Shem Hashem and writing a black Shem Hashem over it. That's a big problem. Why? Because now you have a by doing so, you are actually erasing the Shem Hashem, which is potentially, but probably an Isser Doraisa, right? So the Shemos Hashem, when it comes to Stam, it becomes a challenging thing sometimes, because to erase aspects of it could be a significant problem. So I had my nephew Eliezer, who's the sofer. Excuse me, one second. So actually, a couple of years ago, somebody contacted me about writing a bunch of very small mezuzahs. He had a bunch of small mezuzahs all over their house, like a bunch of small mezuzah cases, and he wanted all mehudar mezuzahs. The small mezuzahs are 7 centimeters. They're, we don't generally sell below 10 centimeters. 7 centimeters is usually lower quality. This guy said, no, I want 7 centimeter or potentially even 6 centimeter mehudar mezuzahs. I'm like, okay, I can't help you, whatever. And somehow he got in touch with, I think the person came to me through through a relative, so his relative then directed him to speak with my nephew directly, who was able to find a sofer who was willing to write it. In fact, my nephew sent me a picture of a Sefer Torah that was written that's 10 centimeters tall, right? So he's this guy specializes in small writing and writing mahudr. So he when I was last time I was in Israel, I guess now about a year and a half ago, so he showed me these smaller mezuzahs that he had gotten mahudr, but then he showed me one that he had to pull out. Why do you have to pull it out? Because I forget which letter, I think probably was a hey, had like a little tag coming out of the side. Now, normally a tag coming out of the side is not a problem because you could just erase it. The problem was, this was in the Shem Hashem. This was part of the Shem Hashem. So this little tag knocked it down from being a mehudar mezuzah, and you couldn't erase it because it was part of the Shem Hashem. So he was stuck. So, so he was going to send it back to the sofer. I offered to buy it off of him for, whatever it was on the spot. But he said, no, he, the guy wrote it, he might want to take it and sell it to someone else. I can't sell it to you. He's like, all right, fine. So, that's part of the Shem Hashem issue, the name of Hashem issue when it comes to these stam things. It becomes difficult if there's any problem in the letter of the Shem Hashem to go ahead and fix it.
So what we're saying is that if you write over, let's say, a rat, then you're not quite erasing it.
The Chassam Sofer says there's two types of red. There's red because the ink became old, or there's red because the ink was defective. If it's red because the ink became old, he says that's really black ink that turned red. In which case, if you're going to write black over it, the Chassam Sofer thinks that that's okay because you're just reinvigorating that which is already there. But if it's actually problematic black ink, right? So then it's not black ink, it's red ink, in which case it's a red Shem Hashem. And if you're then going to go and write black over the Shem Hashem, you're then going to be, in effect, erasing the Shem Hashem, and he suggests that that would then be a problem. Okay? Another discussion here, we kept they referenced a couple times the idea of using the smoke from the oil. So the smoke from the oil is apparently that stopped being in use for a while, and therefore we also saw that the idea that the ink is supposed to sort of erase over time. So there is the halacha that the ink that is that tefillin doesn't have to be checked. If you in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Lamed Tes, it says that tefillin, as long as they're in regular use and there's no damage that happens to them, and it's not, left in the trunk of your car for a week at a time during the middle of the summer, or left in your freezer, right? So tefillin doesn't have to be checked. However, the Aruch HaShulchan says at the end about bizmanenu yadua shehadio shelanu b'meshach eza shan nikbatzim me'al haklaf. And nowadays we know that the ink does come off of the klaf a little bit, and therefore nowadays medina tzrichim livduk osam be'ezas man uvein yishlinhog. That we should check it every once in a while, and that is the minhag. What does once in a while mean? So I think the minhag of the sofrim, at least the ones that are not out to make a quick buck, is to check it about every 15 years or so. So that's what I tell people, to have their tefillin checked every 15 years, unless, if you trust the sofer and you think it came from a good place and it was checked originally, so then that's how often, and nothing happened to it along the way, it should be checked every 15 years. What happened?
I think having they fill in for 15 years and then they get it checked and it turns out that the partials were not kosher. So you just been praying for 15 years.
Yeah. So there's two types of psulim. There are two types of things that could be found in a pair of tefillin when you open it up. Number one is that you could find out that it's a problem now because the ink faded over time, or you could find out that it's never been kosher. Right? Finding out that it's never been kosher is a pretty disappointing thing. I think Rabbi Ari Leibowitz in his Sefer has an article on that, about what to do. There's various ideas about what to do if you find out that your whole life you've been wearing pasul tefillin. Right, that's a pretty sad thing. But often, nowadays especially, because all tefillin is computer checked, all new tefillin that's made is computer checked, Don't worry, Abraham, your tefillin was computer checked. So it's going to be pretty hard to find something that's been puzzled the entire time. That's not going to happen too often, assuming you're buying from somebody reputable. It's more going to be that you're going to find something that faded over time. And that does happen. Now, in the book Inside Stam, he writes that the reason is because they switched from a carbon-based ink to a vegetable-based ink, meaning they stopped using the smoke. Now, I don't know. I thought, you know, maybe coal is back under the Trump administration, that we should go back to using the carbon-based ink. And apparently they did. I mean, apparently that is back to being the minhag of using this smoke, which I don't know if that really affects the halacha of being of the stuff fading over time or not. Still, it's probably recommended to have your tefillin checked every 15 years. Rabbi Levine, when I spoke with him a couple weeks ago about Rav Rav Tefilansky in Israel, so he said his chiddush was that his tefillin never needed to be opened. He was probably using the carbon ink. He said he was confident you never have to open the tefillin because it's never going to fade. I don't know, if a sofer would tell me, never open this, don't worry, you don't need to open this ever, I'd probably be a little more nervous and say, maybe I should go and open it. But apparently that was the minhag from the minhag in Yerushalayim.
I was watching a video today, actually, of a sofer up in Muncie, New York. And so he's talking about cheap fill-ins that you find on eBay and Amazon. And he says that a guy came to fix his regular fill-in and said, well, if it requires too much work, don't worry about it. I have one coming on eBay in the next couple weeks. So he's like, okay, well, if you don't mind me asking, I would like to see it. I want to know what's going on. So he brings it over, and he literally allows him to open the fill-in. He takes out the parshiot. It looked like a kid with a crayon.
Yeah.
Wrote. You could not tell what letters there were, and that's why the guy was selling it for so cheap.
Yeah, no, there is bad fill-in on the market. I mean, somebody told me a couple. Somebody showed me. They bought online a. Like a tefillin that was distributed to IDF soldiers. So he somehow found it on eBay and he purchased it and he sent it to me to take a look at it. Yes, it was not it was not recommended. It's tefillin for recommended use. So the person.
I wonder if eBay buyers guarantee protection for that.
Yeah, I don't know. So while we're on the page, just two notes here. While we're on the page here, so this Taz on Ches is a famous Taz, not for the reasons that we're talking about, not so much for these halachas, but for other halachas, because he discusses the idea of using a metal. Actually, it's already on the next idea. So actually, let's just look in Shulchan Aruch Sif Zayin, because I do want to finish Reish Ayin Aleph tonight. In Shulchan Aruch. One second here. Let's make sure my recording is actually going here. Yeah. So in Shulchan Aruch Sif Zayin, he says, Sefer Torah Tzarech Lichtavo B'yamin, that needs to be written with your right hand. Yishor M'shish Lichtav B'kulmus Shalkana V'lo B'notza. And there are some say that it should be written in with a kulmus of kana, of reed, and not with a notza, not with a feather. Okay, so a couple of details there, but this idea of writing with your right hand, actually take a look here. No, the Piskei Tshuva here on the bottom says you need to write with your right hand. He actually says you need to have your hands uncovered. That would be considered a bizayun if you tried writing with gloves. Not a good idea. But the idea of writing with only your right hand, so that's not really discussed here, but is discussed in Hilchos Tefillin. And there, in Hilchos Tefillin, explicitly says your right hand, meaning your stronger hand. If it's your stronger hand, it's okay. So if you're so you could have a lefty sofer potentially. At least that's the way it seems from the Shulchan Aruch. In the Mishnah Berurah, he says, but if you write with your right hand and you do everything else with your left hand. So then or vice versa, I think. So then you are a suffix. Then it's a little unclear, and you probably shouldn't be writing stam. You probably shouldn't be a sofer if that's the case. So I don't know, Dad. Are you don't do anything with your right hand except for bat.
I golf too.
You golf and bat right, but other than that, everything else is lefty. All right, so you're not a suffix, but there are other people that have the situation. Then you shouldn't be a sofer if you're writing with your right hand, but really your left hand is your stronger hand. So it's not really a big deal, right? Okay, so like that's a halacha that the sofrim need to know. Like, what do we really need to know? So in the book Inside Stam, he points out, he says, no, wait a second. This could have important ramifications because there are ksivas sefer Torahs, right? At the ceremony to conclude the writing of a sefer Torah, often they let people put letters in. He says, if you're letting somebody put a letter in, so you better make sure that they're actually writing with their right hand, or if they're lefty, with their left hand, and not this middle guy in the middle. Now, normally they don't even do that. Normally, I mean, what I've seen is, you know, the person writes, and they let the guy hold on to the tip of the feather on the other side or something like that. The person's not really filling it in. But it's interesting, ha'ara, and it would be the same thing here, meaning with the gloves that the Piskei Tshuva quotes, it's considered a bizayon to the Sefer Torah to write with your hands. Covered, he bases it on a Gemara in Maseches Pesachim, that a person did the avoda with their hands covered, with like wearing gloves, and that was considered to be a chilul Hashem. It would probably be the same thing if you have a Torah dedication and it's outside and it's a cold day or it's in the middle of COVID, right, and it's 30 degrees, right? So if you're going to actually be involved with the writing of the Sefer Torah, you shouldn't be wearing gloves while you do so.
How do you avoid smudging? Do you use like a bridge or like a wrist rest to write?
You mean if you write? I don't know, I think they write, they keep their hands up, but you're also writing from left, you are writing from right to left, so yeah, that's about, I don't know.
So you would hit the back.
Yeah, they're right, that could potentially be a problem. Right, I will tell you, my nephew told me that he writes, when he writes mezuzahs, he writes three at a time, because that way he writes letter in one, letter in another, and letter in another, so while he's writing each of those other letters, the one before is, on the other parchment is drying up. Right, so with the Sefer Torah, you can't really do that, but with mezuzah, at least that's what he's doing, yeah.
If you're writing Hebrew, a lefty has an advantage.
That's right, a lefty would have an advantage. I did see, however, and Abraham, you should know this, Sfardim are actually makbid on this, that you shouldn't have a lefty sofer. Ashkenazim are not, but apparently there are lefty, there are Sfardi poskim that suggest that a lefty sofer might actually be a problem based on this Gemara. Based on this idea,
right?
Yeah, and then there is there's one more taz here, which is a little bit of a believe it or not taz, and that is on the page where he talks about chakika, which is engraving, and he says by the way chakika, he says by the way, how do you get into it, because right, he wants you to write with a quill and not with something that's actually going to etch into the cloth. So he says, by the way, now that we're talking about engraving a little bit, let me tell you what I've been thinking. He says, because if I have heard, now the Taz lived in the 1600s, right? The printing press was developed in the 1400s. So he's now about 100 years into printing, right? So he says, by the way, I heard that she'ein besfarim hanitfasim kedusha, that there are those who say that kedusha, that Torah, that svarim that are printed do not actually have kedusha, kemo hanichtavim, like the ones that are written, biksav, which would be a very good idea to solve the Seamus problem, right? He suggests that things that are printed don't have kedusha, that people have said that. He says, v'li nirin, I think it's not true. She'ein chilik, but there's no distinction. That filu im nemar dahava chakika, that even if you say that it's engraving, mikol makom hu ksav, it's considered writing. Dahagam gabe get isha kasher b'chakikus yirachos, kosher kasav evan ezersim kachavhei. Because what's writing a get is permissible by engraving. Okay, fine. So engraving would be good. He says, and I have a proof from Perek Egla Arufa, Araya Brura, a clear proof from Egla Arufa, that this would be considered writing. What is his proof? So in Perek Egla Rufa, it discusses the creation of the Avanim on the Choshen, of the stones on the Choshen. How did they write? How did they get the names of the Shvatim on the stones that appeared on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol? This is like a totally esoteric thing. So apparently it had to be engraved, but the Gemara points out, the Gemara says, but it can't be engraved because the stones had to be whole, right? So this is the This is the riddle, right? How do you maintain, how do you engrave while keeping the stones whole? So the Gemara says, no problem, right? Just they would write the letters on top in some kind of ink, and then they would use the what's it called? The shamir. Then they would take out the shamir, right? This magical worm, and that would dig into the stone somehow, maintaining the stones being whole, but not being but considered to be engraved. Okay? So then the Taz says, so what does that have anything to do with printing or anything like that? So he says, Aidei Shamir Shu Davar She'enu Matzi. You use Shamir, which is something that's totally lost. Why? Dilma Haya Al Yedei Hatfus Uvdiyo Kitfus Shalanu. V'nimse Shapir Miskayim Chusei Chosem. Because if they, why did they have to go and ahead and use this Shamir? They could have just used a printing press, right? If you're going to tell me that printing is engraving, and not writing, so then why did they go and do all this trouble and use the miraculous shamir? They could have just used a printing press. Ela baruhu demaisad fus mikrei ksiva. So rather, what do we see? The fact that the Jews in the desert, when creating the stones, didn't use a printing press tells us what? That it must be that it's considered writing and not considered to be engraving. To which, like, you say, what? What? The reason they didn't use a printing press in the desert is because it wasn't going to be invented for another 2,500 years.
No, not exactly. I mean, what Gutenberg invented in 1450 was a movable type. There was...
Okay, correct, right, okay.
The transference.
Right. Okay, that's true.
I don't see how it's... I mean, printing is transfer of ink to a surface. How is that engraving? How is that different?
No, but he's saying this is what I heard from people. I mean, I heard people say that it's considered engraving, not printing, and therefore it doesn't. It's not considered Seamus. It's not going to be a Seamus issue.
Well, the metal strikes the paper, it may make an indentation.
Correct, but it's also writing at the same time.
Yeah.
You're also writing as well. So this actually, the only reason I when I came to this page, this Taz was already all underlined for me. The reason is because Rabbi J.J. Schachter has a whole shiur on this topic of the idea of does Chazal, how much does Chazal take into account modern inventions, or how much should we read into Chazal about modern inventions? Meaning, could Moshe Rabbeinu have used did Moshe Rabbeinu know what an iPhone was? Right, so you could say, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu knew what an iPhone was. He was the most smart. He was the smartest person that ever lived. Right, he just didn't use one because, you know, he didn't use one. He didn't want to use one.
He didn't know how to activate it and use it.
Or he didn't have the password or something like that. Right. He didn't have Abraham to come and take care of it for him. Right. Or he could say he didn't use an iPhone because he never invented it. So this is like a whole discussion. If you want to find it, I could send you the link on why you tore. Actually, I think I have it on the page here. If you'd like to see the shir, it is found here. Did Moshe Rabbeinu know everything? That is the title. And here is the link if you want. What? From this Taz, he goes and develops a whole idea as to how we recognize inventions and the chachma, the wisdom that existed in the past. Okay, this issue with the ink and with the reed and the feather, or maybe we'll just touch on that a little bit in the beginning of next week, and then we're able to move on finally to the next siman of Ayin Reish Beis. All right, stop here. Good evening.
Yeah.
Yes, are you just waving, Sam? Okay. Oh, oops.